The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
For those of you who have been here even a little bit, you know we're just in for another treat this evening. If this is your first time at the convention, we do say welcome to you and good for you for making it. You're going to want to come back in the morning. We have just been given such a gift, and we so appreciate you, Chris, and I think it's your turn now.
Is there anyone who's having difficulty hearing me? Okay. I do have some bookmarks here. One is the Serenity Prayer, one is the 11th Step, and the bookmarks, if anybody wants those, I'll put them on the table. I've received three envelopes of people who would like me to send a letter they've written to themselves, either from themselves or from their higher power. The envelopes in the folder will be over there. If someone would kindly remind me to make sure I take it, to send it at some time in the future, that would be greatly appreciated. My name is Chris, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Chris.
Today is Saturday, March 22nd, 2014, and we are here at the St. Louis OA Convention. The reason I usually say that, just so you know, is that often I listen to recordings and people don't place it, or the day. I don't know when it was, where it was, or anything, so now you know. I've been coming to OA since November 22nd, 2001. My current abstinence date is July 28th, 2002. In 1996, 5 years before I came to program, I wore pants with a 66-inch waist, and I weighed at least 437 pounds. These are my opinions only. I don't speak for OA as a whole. There's only one program of Overeaters Anonymous. That is the 12 steps. Everything else is there to support it. The tools of recovery, the traditions, etc. I am on a journey of self-discovery. The topic I am speaking to today that I want to share on is in all our affairs, and basically looking at all the steps, what they look like before I got into recovery, and then after I got into recovery. God bless you. Being a compulsive person, I want to focus on the destination. In OA, the destination is not a place. It's just more journey. And being addicted to food, I can relate to the concept of more. It's difficult to relate to the concept of enough. All the steps are leading me to that 12th step. Not only the 12th step, but the last four words of the 12th step. Am I practicing this program in all my affairs? When I first came to OA, I concentrated on working steps 1 and 12. I'm powerless, and I'm carrying that message to you. Then I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 only. I'm powerless. God has power. I've decided to let God take care of me, but then I'm not going to do anything about it. This evening, I hope to focus on how I work this program in all my affairs. That goes for all my relationships, inside and outside OA. Step 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Before recovery, food had such a hold on me. I was so powerless. I didn't have much in the way of quality relationships in my life before I got into recovery. I isolated. Not only did I push people away with my nasty attitude and my mood swings, my fat also insulated me. Few people looked long enough or tried hard enough to penetrate the barriers I'd set up. Ideally, all my step one work would have been done before I came to OA, but that has not been my path. I came to OA and lied to myself. I don't have a disease, I just like to eat. The second part was true. I wanted to be special, to be different. I'm no different than any other compulsive overeater. In recovery, step one, I now admit I have a disease. I'm reminded that the word admit means to concede the truth. That is the truth for me. I cannot do this on my own. I often welcome the opportunity to meet new people, as scary as that can be. It's one of the reasons I'm here. Oh, I'm going to pass my pictures around in case anyone wants to see them, if you did not get a chance already. I had some fear about coming to St. Louis. I want to do service. I need to leave the results up to my higher power, because I am powerless over what others think of me. I don't have to get inside another person's head. See, Inside My Head Dance Club, it was not planned. That's part of what I prepared. It's not necessary. I am now more teachable than I ever was. I learn from other OA members and people outside of OA all the time. They have gifts that they are willing to share with me. In 2012, and again last year in 2013, I noticed some branches were dying on an ash tree in our yard. We had two experts come out and look at it. They both came to the same conclusion. It is dying. The tree needed to be removed. It was infested with an insect called the emerald ash borer, which gets inside the tree, bores into it, and kills it from the inside out. Just as compulsive overeating is a disease that works the same way on me, recovery is the same too. It's an inside job. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Before recovery, I took everything personally. Insane. My old concept of God was in the mold of Santa Claus. If I was good, he'd give me what I wanted. Trouble was, nothing was ever enough. And I never saw myself as a good person. I thought God had given up on me. I was so filled with self-hatred that I believed I didn't deserve God's goodness. Living with me at home was pretty insane. I was difficult and unpredictable. A family member even had a nickname for me, Mr. Extreme. I was very volatile. The mental fog of the excess food kept the emotional roller coaster going. I wanted God to remove my fat, yet allow me to go on eating whatever I wanted. I felt I didn't deserve to be happy. This frustrated my family. When food was number one, my relationships all suffered. I was not interested in other people. I was convinced that this was one area of my life that would always elude me. Could have been because I thought I need to do it myself, on my own. Now I look back and ask myself, how is that working for me? It worked well as far as keeping me in the insanity of the disease. When my son, Nathan, died, my other son tried to connect with me by drawing a picture and writing, "I love you, Dad," on it. I yelled at him and took it off the wall. Not very sane, in my opinion. I continue to make living amends for the way I behaved in the past to my family. I used to stay away from relatives' homes on holidays because I didn't want to hear the negative comments and be around the food. I wanted to eat my own food in the privacy of my own home without the nasty remarks. There are a number of food pushers in my family. I didn't want to go to my high school reunion due to temptation. In recovery, step two, I can still get into a mood that is less than supportive. Difference is, I don't choose to overeat over it now. I'm more aware of it. I'm more in touch with my feelings, but they are often uncomfortable. Uncomfortability is the admission price for a new life. God reveals himself slowly to me. At the end of We Agnostics, it says on page 57, when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. I believed that God knows, and I still believe that God knows that if he were to reveal himself to me fully at once, I might not be able to handle it. So he's put himself kind of on a time release for me. God has given me more chances than I can count. He still wants me to choose his way. I need to trust him. As I take action, my faith continues to grow. Sanity for me is eating a measured amount of food every day, stopping, and then doing something else. Living in the real world, it's sanity to recognize that I'll never be cured of this disease, but the disease can be arrested just for today if I'm willing to take a few simple actions. God is like a light switch. I don't need to know what St. Louis Power Company is feeding the wires that come in and how they're all orchestrated. All I know is that's the switch, how to turn it on, and somehow light comes into this room. I don't need to understand all the mechanics. I may not understand every single aspect of how electricity works, but it does not stop me from reaping its benefits. I do participate in most holidays with my family, and I did go to that high school reunion. I ate beforehand and then went to connect with others. It was a nice event. Nice gets a hard time of it these days. It's okay for something to be nice. Bottom line of this step, too, it's spiritual growth or physical destruction. God helps me with every decision, even food choices and amounts, and He loves me in my totality. As hard as that can be to take it in. Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Before recovery, I questioned the existence of God. It's hard to have a relationship with a power greater than myself if I doubt that the being I'm trying to have that relationship with even exists. I used to think I was the center of the universe. That was a lie. Food was fun. It was entertainment. It was a companion that never argued. But it caused me incredible pain. In recovery, although I believe in God, I've heard other members who have different concepts of a higher power, and those concepts have worked for them. Good, I say. We all have the opportunity to come up with our own concept. I've really never objected to my own concept of anything. I don't know about you. Let's say there's nothing out there for those atheists and agnostics. If that is true, nothing has been running my life better than I did for 11 and a half years. I needed to change. We are told that once we take step 3, we can't fail to recover. If I summarize this 12-step program, and by that I mean everything that it stands for to me, I can do it in one word. Change. Am I willing to change? The Big Book says, simple but not easy. I find much value in the short phrase that follows simple but not easy after the semicolon, which reads, a price had to be paid. I now try to look at the way food was intended for me as nutrition to nurture my body. I now call others to let them know they're on my mind or on my heart or both, to tell them I love them, inside OA, outside OA. I made that decision and I now back it up with action. I believe I am worth God's attention. I have a relationship with Him. Yes, it can be confusing. It's hard to explain, mystical, intangible, but it's there. It's working so far. When I feel I'm headed toward doing only what I feel like doing or what I can get away with, I call my sponsor or another abstinent member and get that poisonous idea out of me. If I'm sincere in making this decision, my higher power will show me the path. His way never involves cookies. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Before recovery, I took everyone's inventory with regularity. It was even called to my attention by friends. They told me I was so critical. Can you imagine? I thought sarcasm was funny. It means to tear flesh. That's what I did. Sure, my defects outnumbered my assets. They still do. I used to practice my defects a lot more, so I got to be an expert at them. Quite a few of them. There wasn't much demand for selfishness, jealousy, greed, lying, procrastination, arrogance, stealing, oversensitivity, perfectionism, low self-esteem, judging, and all the others. In recovery, step 4. My inventory includes assets as well as defects, and I hope to focus more and more on practicing the assets. Things like willingness, caring, honesty, openness, kindness, dependability, humor. Lighten up, Chris. These come in pretty handy, especially at work, where my ability to be open can be tested quite intensely. I'm reminded that every defect I ever had was an asset until I took it too far. Fear, was self-protection. Take it too far, it goes to fear. If I have no protection, I'm all over the place. Jealousy was admiration until it went haywire. Oversensitivity was caring. Pride was self-worth. Sloth was rest and renewal. Embellishing or lying was storytelling. Inconsiderateness was determination. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Before recovery, I rarely opened up to people. Why didn't I trust? Perhaps because I was not very trustworthy. Gossip, as I have said, used to be a favorite defect of character of mine. I do my best not to make that an option now. When I used to share things about myself, I mainly focused on things that made me look good and, ideally, made others look bad. That's who I was. I didn't want anyone to know me or about me. That's why I did most of my appalling behaviors out of view and out of earshot from most other people. Shame, hideous shame, kept me in isolation. In fact, step 5 terrified me so much I delayed the completion of my step 4 because I was obsessing about the fear of having to do step 5. In recovery, step 5, it took me 3 sessions and over 7 hours to give my step 5 away to my sponsor. Here's how cautious I was in selecting a sponsor. I asked this woman who had what I wanted, and by that I mean physical, emotional, and spiritual recovery, to be my temporary sponsor. Why temporary? Because I wanted to be able to get rid of her in case she ever asked me to do anything I didn't want to do. That same person remains as my primary sponsor. I also have 2 backup sponsors, a man and a woman. I call my primary sponsor just about every day and check in with where I'm at. There is one person who knows all about me. Why not my wife? Someone may wonder. The Big Book clearly tells me that I am not to disclose anything to my spouse that may be harmful. After years in recovery, I did share something with my wife after some prayer. I told her how I used to have only 2 thoughts, food and I wish I were dead. I wanted her to know how intensely this disease had affected me, while assuring her that it was me and not her who had the problem. See, my fear was that she would have thought, I love my husband so much, and still he has these destructive thoughts. It was a tender, revealing moment for both of us at the kitchen table. So not only did my sponsor get that information, but my wife as well. I've offered to share parts of my story with my children, but they have not taken me up on it, perhaps in time. My living children are 26 and 21 at this point. I now take my inventory and give it away in small bite-sized morsels to either my sponsor or one of my backup sponsors. I would like to say something about the specifics of the wording of this step, which I like. First, we admitted to God. Good thing, because since I established a relationship with Him in earlier steps, He's there for me, accepting me as I am. Second, we admitted to ourselves. Good thing, because I can be so hard on myself. As my sponsor has said, Chris, it's not necessary that you are bloodied each time you admit something or make amends. I'm still working on it. Third and finally, we admit the exact nature of our wrongs to another human being, not every other human being. Only after I've admitted these things to a kind and gentle, loving higher power, and then to my potentially harsh self, am I ready to broach the subject with another person. Another way God has taken care of me. This step teaches me trust and the integrity that goes with it, so that I can fully admit what is really going on with me. Step 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Before recovery, my defects were way too fun. No way was I ready to give them up. They kept people at arm's length. Goody. More isolation and misery for me. And then I'd say, see, nobody loves me. Not only did my fat insulate and protect me from others, it also gave me something to blame. My fat was why people didn't like me. The same for my defects. In recovery, step 6 looks like this. My working of this step was especially helpful. I thought I could complete step 5, go home for an hour, as the big book says, and then I'd be ready. My sponsor wisely suggested I sit with it for a while. Well, what do you think happened? Resentment! Big time. How dare she? Doesn't she know I am ready when I say I am ready? God knew better and worked through my sponsor to get the message to me. I wasn't ready. Saying I'm ready and being ready are two different things, as the OA 12 and 12 says. Within a few days, I discovered I was nowhere near ready. Our OA 12 and 12 states that we want to get right on with the business of being perfect people. That was me. Oh yes, how was that working for me? It didn't. All of this was while in recovery, mind you. Thank God for that. Finally, I became ready after some time, prayer, and lots of action, especially in talking with other members, including my sponsor. Step 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Before recovery, I didn't want to get rid of any of my shortcomings. Some people have charm. I had what I like to call counter charm. It was somewhat frightfully endearing in its tendency to put off other people. Yuck. In recovery, I often find my defects popping up at the most inopportune moments. Sometimes they get this bright idea to have a block party in my head, or in my heart, or in my soul, and they all come out at once and have a dance party, like we saw last night in the skit. I can pray that God remove them at once and then let him take care of them in his own good time, not mine. I imagine other people see this when a mistake is called to my attention at work and I choose not to argue about it, but say gratefully, thanks for bringing this to my attention. Now I can work on it. What a change from the way I used to be. Do I remember to listen to God's will all the time? Not at all, but I am learning. Step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Before recovery, I knew I had harmed a lot of people. I was a big-time list maker. No way was I ever going to make a list of all the people I had harmed. In recovery, I just took the list from my fully completed step 4 and then went on to the business of step 9. Remember, the purpose of step 8 is to learn attitudes of mercy and forgiveness. There's a story of a young boy and girl who were living with their grandparents for the summer. And the grandmother had this treasured, beloved pet duck. And the young boy liked to play with his slingshot. Don't get ahead of me. And he thought, I'm going to try and hit that duck. And of course, he was a terrible shot. And he did hit the duck right upside the head, and he fell over dead. He looked around. Didn't see anybody, picked up the duck, went to a corner of the yard behind the shed, buried the duck. As he was getting up and turning around, his sister was standing there like this. She goes, I saw what you did. He goes, don't tell anybody. And she goes, I won't. So at dinner that night, Grandma needed help doing the dishes. And the sister said, let's say it's Tom and Mary, okay? So Mary says, I was going to help you tonight, but Tom said he wanted to help you. Remember the duck. So Tom helped. In the morning, they were all supposed to go fishing, Grandpa and the two kids. And she said, I wish I could spare Mary today, but I need her help around the house. And Mary said, that's okay. Tom said he would help you around the house today. He'll stay home. I'm going with Grandpa fishing. Remember the duck. This went on for a few days. He was getting more irate, Tom. One thing led to another. Finally, he couldn't take it anymore. And he went to his grandma and he says, I am so sorry. I have kept this to myself, but I was playing with my slingshot. I didn't mean to do it, but I killed your duck. And she goes, yes, I know. I saw it happen. I was just wondering how long you were going to go around punishing yourself and letting your sister make a slave of you before you came clean about it. Step 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. If there was something in it for me before recovery, I'd make amends to someone, but not if I couldn't see the personal benefit. No way. In recovery, how I dreaded step 9, but I tell you, it has been one of the most surprising of the steps for me. I knew the OA 12 and 12 said it might be, but I wasn't sure I could believe it. In fact, I'm delighted and eager to make amends for things that come to my attention that I had forgotten about when I first did my fourth step and fifth step. Since I want to stress how I use this step in all my affairs, I'm going to share some examples. I stole music from a voice teacher in 1979. I finally returned it in May of 2003. She was thrilled and couldn't say enough about how wonderful it was of me. I still don't know what to make of that. Here I thought any respect she may have had for me would be shattered by the shocking revelation that I was a thief. This woman was 24 years older and in her 70s, I believe, by the time I made amends. She could have died before I had the chance. One thing I continue to learn over and over, the time to do something good or say something nice is now. Another example, during a meeting, an OA member was writing down some notes. I tried to get a glimpse of what she was writing. I did not have the right to do that. I wasn't sure if she picked up on my behavior or not, sitting right next to her. I felt that it was God's will that I tell her about it. I did not want to tell her about it. Right after the meeting, I pulled her to the side and said simply, "I need to make amends. I tried to see what you were writing down. I apologize. I had no right." Without asking, she quickly thanked me for my honesty and accepted my apology. We remain friends to this day. I remembered about cheating an auto repair shop years after the incident. Here's what I did. In 2000, I had some repair work done on my vehicle. I had it serviced. It was tuned up or something. It was a snowy day with large drifts. The next day, I drove rather recklessly and ran into one of those snow drifts. The car started to make a noise after that. I complained to the auto repair manager and brought it in for their inspection. They said that one of the fan belts got loose and something must have gotten up in there. I personally believe it may have been snow, but that is a guess. They fixed it and then had the nerve to try to charge me for the repair. I was not going to stand for that. I told them the car was fine until I brought it in for service a few days ago, and it must have been something they did that made it start making that noise. And that's what brought the fan belt loose, because they did something. They let me get out of there without paying and just took what I dished out. Then in 2005, over 4 years later, I finally remembered my behavior and it became clear to me that I owed them amends. Of course, they had done without the income for that one repair for a long time. I was ready to make the amends God wanted me to make. I arrived and offered to pay for the repair. I started out by being willing to at least double the cost of it, my need for bloodying myself showing up again. The manager, the same guy as before, said that that wasn't necessary. He wasn't sure he could find it in the computer. Well, he did find it, and the cost was $37.75. He would not take a penny more. I paid, and I smiled all day due to that. It also helped me to stay in recovery a little longer. Step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Before recovery, well, since step 10 is just a daily reworking of steps 4 to 9, of course I had no interest in this type of activity at all. In recovery, I catch myself doing and living step 10 a lot. See, I don't want those things hanging out there to wreak havoc on my emotional, physical, and spiritual life. So I check things out and see if I may have been wrong, and then I admit it as soon as possible. I still have emotionally bad days. I just don't overeat over them. It's not an option. I let go of always going for perfection. When I learned to ride a bike, it wasn't pretty. When I taught my children to ride bikes, it wasn't any better. One saying that goes for bike riding, as well as this program, there will be falls. That's why it's good to wear long pants, preferably thick jeans when learning to ride a bicycle. And in this program, my jeans are my higher power to protect me and guide me and to help me learn about balance. I also have step 10. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Before recovery, I prayed only when I wanted something. In recovery, I now pray from a standpoint of gratitude. The Big Book clearly says we stood at the turning point. When I find myself at a turning point, what am I going to do? Which way am I going to go? My way or God's way? I don't always make the right decision, but more often than not, I am willing to listen to God in meditation. Sometimes I play the piano to get in touch with my higher power. It's humbling because I am nowhere near being the best pianist in the world, nor the worst. God allows me to live in that middle area that used to be so uncomfortable for me. Sometimes I pray when the bakery section of my grocery store puts out the fresh-baked French bread and the smell is overwhelming. God, thanks for reminding me of just who I am and how abstinence is your will for me today. I love you for that and for so many other things. Next thing I know, I'm in the produce section. It's a miracle and allows me to come to believe all over again. There's a story I like to tell about intermittent headlights that has to do with step 11. The connection when a car has intermittent headlights is not a good one. Something's short-circuiting. It gets especially dangerous when rough weather or darkness comes. That's when I really need the headlights to work. However, many cars have what they call day runner lights. They're on when the car is on. That's the kind of connection I need with my higher power. Conscious contact. When I'm awake, I need a connection with my higher power. So when I really need the connection, it's there. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This is what I'm focusing on in this talk. All our affairs. If it's really hard for me to work this program in all my affairs, maybe I have too many affairs. Before recovery, after my son died, I had very little hope for my future. I still miss him. I don't think I'll ever get over that sense of loss. Grief. It's part of the fabric of my life, it seems. I used to grieve the foods and behaviors I gave up. Periodically, when I'm feeling bad about things, I can still grieve the loss of many things. The message I carry to other compulsive overeaters and everyone else in my life, I think, was for the first 8 months in this program, was that I am beyond hope and nothing will ever work for me. Step 12 in recovery, God is helping me to see that what a cruel lie that was. I'm not beyond hope. None of us is. I look for opportunities to be of service. I was asked to be here this weekend and want to express my appreciation for this chance to share myself with you. I've told my doctor that I'm in OA. That's part of carrying the message. I do meet other people who are overweight. They may not be compulsive overeaters. I don't diagnose them. That's part of carrying the message too. I am aware enough to realize that I have the potential to relapse. If I were to do that, it's not because OA does not work. That would be my choice. The first compulsive bite is just an arm's length away. That is a sobering idea, one that I need to remind myself of often, so I go to meetings regularly. I use the tools of recovery and look for ways to apply the steps in my life and in all my relationships. Step one usually applies and can be rather humbling. Once I got it into my head that I would read the chapter to wives, one paragraph per day to my wife to tell her what I'm trying to accomplish with my life, a loving fellow OA member said, I didn't have to do that. If I'm living the 12 steps to the best of my ability, I don't need to read her a chapter from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. She will see it. Only she can tell you if she sees it or not. I do spend a lot of time an effort on carrying the message to others. To me, the message is that there can be recovery no matter what. There are still some difficult relationships in my life. That's okay. I need to share that, and I need to hear from others that they're doing that too. What a great opportunity to work the program with XYZ person who shall remain nameless. True, all my relationships are better overall, but none of them are perfect. Page 98 of the Big Book of AA reminds me to burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust God and clean house. I do trust in God, as completely as my limits of being human allow me to. I'm grateful for that. I want to share this story with you. Anybody know a person who lived years ago named Pete Gray? If Pete Gray were here, he would tell you that self-motivation, determination, and action are the keys to personal success, and he should know. At 6 years old, Pete lost his arm in a freak farm accident. While trying to jump onto a slow-moving wagon, he missed, fell off, and caught his right arm in the wheel spokes. The arm was badly mangled. Doctors said there was no way to save it, so the arm was amputated just above the elbow. The accident literally cut off the key to his dreams. Or did it? Pete Gray was right-handed and desired more than anything to become a Major League Baseball player. Did he give up on his dream? Not on your life. Pete Gray learned to bat from the left side. He focused all his efforts on strengthening that left arm and mastering its control. His sharp eye and brilliant magic produced well-laid bunts, screaming line drives, and unbelievable distance. As a semi-pro, I want to share that I came across this story just today in a book that I already owned. I didn't search, can I find something related, you know, to what I'm talking about? I just came across this today. If that's not a higher power moment, I don't know what. As a semi-pro, his fielding acrobatics entertained the crowds. Pete Gray wore his glove on his fingertips. After catching the ball, he would quickly stick the glove under the stump of his right arm, grab the ball with his left arm, and throw. Amazing as it may seem, very little time was lost in this systematic approach. While playing for the Memphis Chicks, Pete Gray began making a reputation for himself. In 1944, he batted .333, stole 63 bases, and was named the league's most valuable player. In two seasons of play, he struck out only 15 times. His determination and baseball success made Pete Gray a household word. Even the U.S. government began filming his unusual yet effective style of play to show to wounded veterans. His story became an inspiration to many. Finally, in 1945, Pete Gray's dream became a reality. Despite periodic personal doubts, discouragement from others, and of course his physical disability, Pete Gray signed a major league contract with the St. Louis Browns. If success really is doing what makes you happy, then Pete Gray was a successful man. You can recover regardless of anything. I want to run. How much time do I have? Do we know? I got a few more minutes. Could I ask you to look at this paper and tell me what you see on it?
A duck.
Okay.
Move to an X down here.
Okay. Thanks. She sees a dot. The X is down there because the paper's kind of folded a little bit. But I'm focusing on this dot here. Now, I don't know how many people can see that from where you're sitting. There's a dot. That, for me, is abstinence. The most important thing in my life, without exception. Seven items, five food types and two behaviors, are just that much part of my life. But they are the center, that God-given gift, are the center of what I need to be doing. All this white area, which most of you can see, and probably in the back is all you can see, that's everything that's available to me. Because my focus takes care of this first, and all this tends to fall in the place that I need it to fall in. Even if I don't want it to fall into the place that God wants it to, it falls into place. So I thought I'd use that analogy. And I want to share two more stories. Since I have 10 minutes, I don't know that it will take that long, but if it does, I have one. Years ago, in 2005, I visited my daughter's high school. One of her friends, who we have known for many years, had a shirt on with the saying, "I accept hugs." Well, I took the shirt at its word and told her I'd be willing to give her a hug. She stood up. I did hug her. Then I realized the Take Your Parents to School Day was coming up, and I had gone the previous 3 years. This was her senior year in high school. I needed to submerge my ego and wait for my daughter to ask me rather than bringing it up and trying to pressure her into allowing me to come. See, I didn't know, but I had embarrassed my daughter by hugging her friend, and she told me they had given her a hard time about it. I realized then once again that the program I am working is so far from perfect that it truly is humbling. I told her I was going to go and spend the day with her only if asked. I said I wanted to respect her boundaries and that I was willing to stay away if she preferred. I said that I am trying to learn, to change, to improve, to grow. Her response was, "I want you to come. I like it when you come." That made me glad and allowed me to see that I am making some progress. I want to close with one final story. I sometimes use a GPS navigation system. What does GPS stand for? Global Positioning System. I put in the destination I say I want to arrive at, and then it calculates a route. I used one to get here. It can come up with a route that avoids highways, or the fastest route, or if I'm walking or riding a bike, it will give me different routes to get to the same place. If I go straight when it suggests that I turn right, it recalculates. If I then go a bit further and turn left when it says I should keep going straight, it recalculates. It takes into account where I am at and then figures out how to get me where I say I want it to go from my present location. Our program is the same way. I want to end up at the destination of recovery. Just the recovery zip code. I can go to any number of locations when I am there, as long as I stay in that recovery zip code. In my recovery, I also need a GPS, a God positioning system. Just like a global positioning system, no matter how many wrong turns I've taken, God never gives up on me. A GPS does not shut down and say, "Hey, just forget it. You never do what I tell you, so I'm not going to go and be here for you anymore." Neither does God. When I get off course, God immediately comes up with another way. Everyone makes mistakes once in a while. My higher power still has a way to bring my dreams to pass. I used to think God was mad at me, keeping a record of everything I ever did wrong. When I made poor choices, I wouldn't dare go to God and ask Him for help. I thought I had to pay for my mistakes. I actually got to the point where I gave up on my dream that I could ever recover from this disease. I went around depressed and defeated, thinking that I was paying God back. I have made mistakes, but nothing I have done, not a thing, and I've done some pretty horrible things. Nothing I have done is too great for the mercy of God, and it's nothing that He cannot handle. God has never let go of me. I don't retain or remember all the meetings and readings I've experienced, just as I don't recall the full date details of every single abstinent meal I've ever had, but I'm sure they all nourished me in some way. I used to be intimately familiar with cafeterias, restaurants, fast food joints, grocery stores, and bakery outlets. You know, life is like a cafeteria. You probably picked up on this, but I like analogies. I choose what I want, and then I pay for it. When I chose harmful behaviors and foods, I paid that price. When I put the 12 steps on my tray, I pay that price. Yes, the steps require sustained and personal exertion, as the AA 12 and 12 says. However, they're only suggested. I only choose to work and live the steps if I want to stay in recovery. There is a solution, and for me, the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous is it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Chris. We are just so blessed this weekend.